Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Ambassador John Campbell, who is the Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for African Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, a career Foreign Service officer and former ambassador to Nigeria, and political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections. His books include Nigeria, Dancing on the Brick, Mourning in South Africa, and his latest, Nigeria, What Everyone Needs to Know. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ambassador John Campbell.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Well, thank you. And what do you think of this election in Zimbabwe that seems to have generated a lot of enthusiasm amongst, I think, close to 6 million registered voters and a population of, I think, what, 17 million? There's a sense that this is the first time that people have been living under Mugabe now for 40 years can speak freely, even make jokes about Mugabe and vote possibly for the opposition leader.
That's right. And of course, the population of Zimbabwe is extremely young, so that for a very large percentage of voters, they have known no other head of state than Mugabe until the coup that forced Mugabe from office last year. The preliminary reports of the elections certainly talk about the enthusiasm of the electorate. I would caution, however, that preliminary reports, of course, come from urban areas because that's where the best communications are. About 63% of Zimbabwe's population is rural. And we really don't know at this stage much of anything about how the elections in rural areas are going.
Well, there's already complaints out there from the opposition of difficulties at polling places, paperwork and rolls that seem to be tampered with. What's your sense of freeness and fairness? There's the former leader of Liberia, I believe, is heading up a delegation of vote monitors.
She is indeed for the National Democratic Institute. What's my sense of it? My sense of it is it's really way too early to make a judgment about what the magnitude is. That there are irregularities is almost certain. After all, there are almost always election irregularities, polls opening late, ballots not being delivered, and so forth. There are almost always election irregularities, for that matter, even in first-world countries such as our own. The issue is, are we talking about something which is really very minor, or are we talking about something which is significant, and it's just too soon to tell? I note with interest that the head of the European Union observers said that in some places the elections appear to have gone extremely well. In other places, they were absolutely chaotic, with people leaving the lines out of disgust. His observation strikes me as really quite credible. It's easy to imagine a process that is extremely variable. I would also comment in passing that in my experience with African observer missions, the European Union's tends to be really quite credible and quite professional.
And again, I'm speaking with Ambassador John Campbell, who's the Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, a career Foreign Service officer and former ambassador to Nigeria, political counselor to the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections. His books include Nigeria, Dancing on the Brink, Mourning in South Africa, and his latest, Nigeria, What Everyone Needs to Know. So just looking at the candidates for a minute, the crocodile, as he's called, Emmerson Mnangagwa, the head of the ZANU-PF party. He's the fellow that basically forced Mugabe out of the ZANU-PF party, and out of office. And, of course, Mugabe held a press conference over the weekend urging his supporters to vote for the opposition to restore the country to constitutionality That's a bit rich coming from Mugabe, is it not?
It is a bit rich. It is also interesting to me that Mugabe actually used the coup word, something everybody has sort of tiptoed around up until now.
So what do we know about the crocodile? My understanding is that Emmerson Mnangagwa, the head of the military who deposed Mugabe and who is running as head of the party to be the next leader, first of all, isn't his nickname based upon the fact that he fed opposition leaders and dissidents to the crocodiles on behalf of Mugabe?
That indeed is what is said on the street. Whether he actually fed opposition leaders to crocodiles or not, I don't know. What is quite clear, though, is he was Mugabe's enforcer. Many observers of Zimbabwe feel that he's up to his elbows in blood. An interesting question is, can somebody who was, in many respects, the linchpin of the Mugabe system, can it move the country in a different direction? Mnangagwa says yes, that he can do that. And he has launched a charm offensive ever since he came into office. A charm offensive directed, however, predominantly towards outside investors. He's clearly seeking foreign investment to try to restore the country's economy, which is in tatters. Credible elections would bolster that effort. We will have to see.
Well, I think foreign aid is predicated upon credible elections, isn't it?
It is, yes. And also the lifting of sanctions against Zimbabwe. We have to be careful, though. Foreign aid and sanctions are important symbolically. They're important politically. But they're not nearly as important as opening the taps of investment into the Zimbabwean economy would be.
So the fact that Mugabe, at age 94, urged his followers to vote for the opposition. He doesn't have a lot of credibility, does he not? I mean,
he does not have a lot of credibility.
And the fact that he tried to get his wife in there was really, wasn't that the tipping point?
That was the occasion for his being deposed. I would say that Mugabe is less popular now than he was at the time of the coup. For one thing, the corruption of many of his cronies has come out since then. He lives in incredibly luxurious circumstances in a country that is desperately poor. So I don't really think that there's much of a Mugabe factor here. I think he is seen by the more than half of the electorate that is under 35 as being very much a figure of the past.
Well, let's talk about the opposition leader of the MDC alliance. That's Nelson Chamisa. He became an MP at the age of 25, a cabinet minister at 31. He could be the youngest president of Zimbabwe, aged 40. That's certainly a break from the 94-year-old Mugabe. He apparently was beaten up by Mugabe's security forces. Had his skull fractured in 2007. He's recently become a pastor, and he also apparently has, on the stump, has been making some rather extravagant promises, introducing a high-speed bullet train. Well, here in California, our high-speed bullet train is floundering. I don't know what the chances are of getting one in Zimbabwe, and also bringing the Olympics to Zimbabwe. So what do you know about this young challenger, Nelson Chamisa?
Well, his background is certainly interesting. By the way, in addition to what you mentioned, he is also a lawyer. He is well educated. He is a Pentecostal preacher. Pentecostalism is spreading like wildfire in Zimbabwe, as it is in other parts of southern Africa. And should he win election, as president. Not only would he be the youngest president of Zimbabwe, he would also be the youngest president of any country in Africa. So he certainly represents a generational change. His policy pronouncements, his promises, I don't think we should pay very much attention to that. I think more important would be his style of governance, his willingness to govern according to the rule of law, something which has been extraordinarily absent in Zimbabwe up until now. Those are the sorts of things that I think would be really, really significant. Politics in Zimbabwe, like in most African countries, is very personal. Personality matters, not policy. And it will be interesting to see if the evident enthusiasm of his supporters actually translates into votes. I would point out that altogether, there are more than 20 candidates for the presidency at this point. That means that the chances of either of the two leading candidates getting the required 50% of the total vote, it strikes me as those chances are not really very good. And what that would mean would be a runoff election between the two leading vote-getters, who would almost certainly be Mnangagwa and Chinsu.
But basically, ZANU-PF have a bigger constituency, don't they, in the middle of the country. And then in the south, the Matabele land, that's where the MDC alliance has its stronghold. And the MDC alliance, of course, represents the very people who've been persecuted by ZANU-PF. I think over 20,000 Matabeles were murdered when Mugabe took over.
That's right.
So is there a chance of defections in ZANU-PF land?
Well, we will have to see. Look, the Mnangagwa has got some real advantages. He controls the security services. The Electoral Commission reports to him. He controls the state media. He knows how to play the ethnic card. My own view is that he would prefer not to have to rig the elections. In other words, he'd prefer to win the elections cleanly. But if it looks like he is going to lose, then I would look for rigging. If rigging takes place, it will take place not on election day, not at the polls. The way you rig an African election is when the various vote tallies are bought together. That's usually done in the middle of the night when there are no observers present. That's when you can play games. And if, in fact, the elections are rigged in Zimbabwe, I think that's when it will take place.
Well, already the MDC is saying if we're robbed, we're going to go to the streets. So that's a sort of combustible situation. I think the real message, though, surely something that you can't even exaggerate it so bad, is what Mugabe has done to that country, shattering the economy, the most amazing inflation, making Weimar Germany look like a picnic, unemployment absolutely devastating, and crumbling infrastructure. I could go on. So that has to be the subtext, surely, there. The people have really suffered under Mugabe, and it's extraordinary to think that the ruling party, Mugabe's ruling party, would even be in the lead, given the country's history.
Yeah, but then back to history. What did Mugabe do? Well, Mugabe drove all the whites out. He expropriated their land. He redistributed some of the white-owned land to African peasant farmers. It's one reason why he's so popular in rural districts. He absolutely destroyed the economy. And Zimbabwe went from being one of the most developed African countries to what is now essentially a basket case, with almost a third of the population living outside of its borders. But history, memories of colonialism, appeals to racism, they're all in there. People react in a way that is often not rational economically.
Well, does that mean then, Ambassador Campbell, that Mugabe at 94, when he passes, he'll be thought of more favorably than he is now? Is that what's going to happen? He'll go down in the history books as the liberator, not as the looter.
Well, he already is viewed as the liberator in important parts of African public opinion. Mugabe, for example, was a critic of Nelson Mandela. Mugabe claimed that what Nelson Mandela did was sell out the majority of South Africa's population, which is black, in order to accommodate the 9% of the population that is white. And this criticism is in circulation in radical circles in South Africa even now. How long is Mugabe going to live? I would note that his mother lived to be 103, so he may be around for a few more years.
Well, just in closing, when you say there's some sympathy in radical circles in South Africa for the idea that the almost deified Nelson Mandela was a sellout to the whites, surely that has to be balanced against what happened with his successors in government, who turned out to be total crooks in the tradition, the lamentable tradition of the big men of Africa politics. Isn't that pretty much the case with Jacob Zuma?
Now, that was the case with Jacob Zuma, not the case with Thabo Mbeki, however. So the issue really is, was Jacob Zuma utterly corrupt? Is he an exception to the general South African rule? My own view is that yes, he is, and that what is really interesting about South Africa is that the country's democratic and legal institutions were strong enough to carry it through a period of very bad governance.
Right, but the point is that Zuma had more in common with Mugabe, so it's a little hard to take that kind of criticism seriously from Mugabe. That Mandela...
Well, he did have close ties with Mugabe,
exactly.
And Zuma, in effect, really never criticized Mugabe, even when South Africa was being essentially having to respond to huge refugee flows from Zimbabwe.
Well, Ambassador Campbell, let's stay in touch, and we'll see how the results are. It may be.
Yeah, we'll see how the results are. I don't think we will really have a very clear picture before roughly a week from now.
Well, again, I've been speaking with Ambassador John Campbell, who's the Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, a career Foreign Service officer and former ambassador to Nigeria, political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections. His books include Nigeria, Dancing on the Brink, Mourning in South Africa, and his latest, Nigeria, What Everyone Needs to Know. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.